For some of us, our online lives on Facebook and Twitter are just as real as our interactions in the physical world. But should we treat the information we generate about ourselves and others in our social media lives any differently? And why are some people content to sit the whole thing out? Joining us now is Sri Srinivasan, professor of digital media and dean of student affairs at Columbia School of Journalism, and I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. We're also inviting listeners to call us at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, and you can tweet us or leave a message on our Facebook page. Have I covered everything?
I think you got it all.
I've left out LinkedIn and a few other things. Maybe we'll talk about those later. Do you think that 2011 will be remembered as the year social media became legitimized as a useful tool and not just as a way to waste time?
Well, I think there's still plenty of ways to waste time on social media. But in some ways, I think that a lot more people became aware of what social media can do, the potential and the pitfalls of social media. And in many ways, I think we're also at the same point now where digital media in general, the web, was maybe in the year 2000, meaning there's still a lot of exciting things still to come, but we have to we also now see the landscape of where things could go.
I just saw a documentary about the protests in Tahrir Square, and there's all Arabic, and then the word Facebook. And we've seen it in the Arab Spring. We've seen it in the Occupy movements, the various ones, and most recently the protests in Russia. So this is not what was originally envisioned as the role of Facebook.
Right. Facebook was going to be a way for you to talk to your friends and share what's going on in your life. But what has happened, I think, is that social media in general and Facebook in particular has become a way to galvanize, a way to amplify, a way to get attention to specific causes and ideas.
And both the Occupy movement, the Tea Party movement have been described as leaderless organizations. In some ways, do you see their structures mirroring our lives on the web?
I think so, that online you never know what's going to come up and be something that's exciting and useful to people. That's what will make a service that's useful. Otherwise, it just kind of goes nowhere.
Well, we've seen different kinds of responses from governments. Certain governments are moving more aggressively against social media as it continues to grow as a tool for protesters and dissidents. China has the Great Firewall. Egypt had an internet kill switch. Do you think the ability of governments to censor parts of the internet will only increase, or will people constantly find ways to get around it?
Well, one of the things I saw was that about 250,000 people in Saudi Arabia joined Facebook over a one-week period a few weeks ago. And you can imagine that the Saudi government was paying very close attention to that fact, because that means that they now have seen what has happened in their neighboring countries. And we've seen other countries like Bahrain and even India, which prides itself as a great democracy, paying attention to the social media and worried that it could be a problem for their government.
Well, why do you think 1 million people joined? They didn't have Facebook to encourage them to join.
No, you're seeing.
But the word goes out, you should do that?
Yeah, word goes out that you should do it. Word goes out that there is something interesting and important happening there, and you don't want to be left out, just like you didn't want to be left out of the town square in centuries in the past.
Well, social media, as I said, has also become a useful tool for governments. The military council in Egypt often posted policy changes on Facebook. Is that a more savvy approach than simply trying to turn the internet off?
Well, turning it off is not an option, and it will not happen because governments themselves need it, and they will see vast protests against that. Instead, they should be active on there and engaging with their citizens, find out what they care about and how they can respond in smart ways.
Well, what about in this country? Isn't the New York Times calls SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, the Great Firewall of America?
And a lot of people are very upset because this means that there is a danger of how people will be able to get their information.
So Is this a much a concern for politicians in this country as it would be in China or Russia?
I think they should be paying as much attention to this issue. And even last night with the Iowa caucuses, we saw that social media has a role in getting people galvanized, energized, coming out to things, participating in a public forum. And that's what we saw.
And I think that Rick Santorum was helped by social media, which is kind of ironic, isn't it?
Well, do you want to explain it, or have your listeners heard this before about Rick Santorum has been defined by people who are against his policies. When you Google his name, things that he certainly doesn't want associated with him have come to define him. And so, if he has now been helped by social media, that's an unusual twist.
Governor Andrew Cuomo is giving his second State of the State address this hour, and my listeners can hear live coverage and analysis of the speech starting pretty much right now on AM 820, or you can stay with us on 93.9 FM for more of our conversation with Sri Srinivasan, who is a professor of digital media at Columbia Journalism School. And we are back with our segment here, inviting your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can post your comments on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also get in touch with us through Facebook or Twitter, or what else is there? Now there's Google has just come up with something.
Yes, Google Plus.
Do I have to have it to know what people are saying?
Well, Google Plus is the thing that everybody was looking at last year. Google had failed to do social media properly, and now they've come back in a very strong way. And Google Plus is another place where a brand like Leonard Lopate and WNYC have to have, or at least be thinking about, a presence. They don't have to jump on it right away, but it does have some innovations that I think are worth looking at.
And from what I read in the paper, last month was really good for Google Plus, suddenly, after resistance. What does it offer that Facebook doesn't offer?
Its main innovation is the idea of circles, meaning you can share your content with just the people you want to listen or to share that content with. So, for example, I might post something on Facebook and it goes out to everyone, and post something on Twitter, goes out to everyone. But here you can kind of zero in on the cohorts of people you want. Facebook responded, I call it the Empire Strikes Back, by launching its own version of that.
Because in the past, when the company du jour, the thing du jour, didn't respond, it wound up disappearing.
Yeah, and that's the story of Friendster and MySpace and all of these. And Facebook, of all of these companies, has to respond and be innovative, otherwise their $60, $70, $80 billion valuation disappears.
The concern a lot of people have is that social media is changing the way many people think about openness and their own privacy.
I think it's a big concern. Mark Zuckerberg himself has been on the record saying privacy is no longer the social norm. And if he believes something, he can affect 800 million lives. President Obama cannot do that without negotiating with Congress and everything else. But he has the power to affect people's lives today.
Because he's all over the world.
And he's the way that people are communicating.
Well, Facebook came under a lot of criticism this past year for what some saw as its relaxed treatment of users' information and privacy. Do you think that many of us trust these corporations too blindly when it comes to personal information? I ask that because one of our listeners, Fern, has written in, and she says, I'm interested in the issue of privacy brought about not by the medium, but by the behavior of social media corporations, especially Facebook. I'm especially interested in the way that the news outlets are catering to social media.
Yeah, they're hand in hand, news organizations and these big companies. Part of the thing is that no one pays attention to those terms of service. We all hit agree without reading that. And companies like Facebook have been very lax in terms of paying attention to how consumers will react to this. And we've seen European governments and others kind of pay attention and kind of go after Facebook. And so I hope Facebook will be chagrined by all this and do a better job with privacy.
Well, social media are also being used as marketing tools. Our online lives are extensively mined by corporations for information about us.
Yeah, now
on Facebook, on Google, on Facebook, you suddenly are told where your friends went on vacation.
Right. So Your friends announcing that they went on vacation is one thing. But with the new tools within Facebook, what you're also doing is every time they listen to a song that's being broadcast, that you're the example I give is that I don't mind telling people that ABBA is one of the bands I like, but I don't want it to announce every time I listen to Dancing Queen, telling all my friends that I'm listening to Dancing Queen. Maybe it's too much Dancing Queen.
Is ABBA really one of your favorite bands?
No comment.
I think Mitt Romney said that Dancing Queen is on his... Great. Isn't that on his cell phone, his ringtone?
Perfect.
Because he loves the movie. Okay, we are going to take our first call from Maria from New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. The question I have for Sri is, how do you deal with the fatigue of all the products that are out there right now? Because I was kind of getting away from Facebook because of the privacy issues and you know, all the changes they kept making. And I thought Google Plus was going to be really great. But between it and Twitter, you know, I just got to a point where I thought, do I really want to start adding people, making circles, loading more info and stuff? And I just kind of shrugged and left it. So, you know, can you help us, I don't know, sort through all of that? And how do we prioritize what we should be paying attention to at the moment and what it's okay to sit on the sidelines and decide, you know, at some point, if you want to jump in later, it's worth jumping in.
And I want to add to that LinkedIn, because I'm bombarded with requests to do something with people, some of whom I know, some I don't. I usually click accept with the people I know, although I have no idea why I'm accepting it and what it's going to mean, unless I'm looking for a job, which I'm not about to do. At least I hope I'm not looking for a job soon.
Are the bosses listening? Well, let's talk about LinkedIn first. And by the way, it's an excellent question, but let's talk about LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is greatly underappreciated as a career management tool. It's not just a job hunting tool. It is a career management tool. You have to use it when you don't need it to build your network, to grow it, to connect with people so that when you need it, it's there for you. Otherwise, what happens is that when you're out of work, you start using LinkedIn, you don't understand the language, you don't understand the etiquette, you don't understand how to talk to people, and you look desperate. And desperation does not work on LinkedIn, doesn't work on eHarmony, doesn't work on JDate, any of those services. So you have to be of the system to make use of it. The other thing that Maria's question really goes after is, how do we keep up with all of this? And there's also this thing that people call Facebook fatigue.
And then the Times had an article recently on people who are opting out of Facebook.
Including young people, which was surprising. And I would say that what you have to do is to say, does this product, this service fit into my workflow and my life flow? If it does both, then it is certainly worth staying and trying it out. There is no prize for being the first on these services. I joined Twitter 2 years after all the cool kids did. One of my students, Franz Strasser, dragged me kicking and screaming onto Twitter. I joined Facebook late. I joined LinkedIn late. All of these I joined because I found a use for it in my life. Until then, I don't use them, and neither should everybody.
The White House has started a Tumblr, joined the photo site, Instagram. Social media is seen as instrumental to the president's election campaign in the upcoming election, as it was in the previous election. My guest is Sri Srinivasan, professor of digital media and dean of student affairs at Columbia University School of Journalism. We will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Sri Srinivasan, professor of digital media and dean of student affairs at Columbia School of Journalism, inviting your calls in this discussion about various social media at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a comment on our show page. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page. You can reach us by tweeting us. Have I left anything out? Well, I don't think we have Tumblr yet. But I'm wondering about another side that is of this whole discussion that has generated some controversy. We leave huge data trails about ourselves. Is there so much data out there that no one corporation or government could sort it all out on the one hand? And on the other hand, are we doing something that might harm us down the line, say something today or post a photo today that's going to come back to haunt us 20 years from now when we're running for president?
I think that that's something that we have to really be paying attention to. Think about young kids today who are posting photos, videos. Well, that's going to be seen by college admissions officers. It's going to be seen by employers. And I know people who have been affected by things that they said 5-6 years ago, and then when they're up for jobs, I don't know anyone who's run for office that that's happened to myself, but I've certainly heard about that, and that's a concern.
Well, they could try to get into a school, and something could backfire.
Absolutely.
And can you remove these things?
Well, you can do some removal, and there are services that will charge you a lot of money to clean up your online reputation. But the best thing we can do is to tell everyone, especially younger people in our lives, that what you do online stays online forever, and that you have to make an extra effort to try to hold back. Don't overshare. And there's a website, oversharers.com. If you go there, you'll see people sharing way too much information. Another website, What the Facebook, where people are sharing too much on Facebook.
But it's also been suggested that it leads us to build a more honest society. Are our foibles going to be more acceptable?
That's certainly one view, but I think that people will take out of context one line, one snippet, phrases, sentences, posts, and then get in trouble. And we've seen people lose their jobs over a single posting that they made.
Well, there's a big difference between the transparency that WikiLeaks was promoting, and they've gotten in trouble for it, and the transparency that some people are providing about what goes on in their lives. Sometimes it's very personal. Sometimes it's extremely boring what they're eating for breakfast.
I tell people, unless you're Ruth Reichel, the famous food writer, I don't want to hear what you're eating for breakfast on a regular basis, at least.
One of our listeners, John A., writes, it's absolutely correct to include Tumblr in this segment. It's the echo chamber for kids in this moment in internet history.
Tumblr, a New York City website, is a part of the phenomenon of microblogging, where people are doing short bursts of information with photographs, videos, and it's also a place where you find a lot of people who care about design and the visual look. It's a very cool website, and we've seen big media companies, places like Newsweek and others, jump in and use it in a big way.
Writing for a site called The Next Web, Neil Harbison wrote, in some ways, social media feels like a Japanese bullet train speeding along at the speed of sound. The train is speeding along and you're either on or off. It's very hard to just jump off the train for a day and then come back. You always feel like you're missing something.
It happened to me. I was away on vacation on a cruise ship, and it was $1 a minute to get the internet, and there's nothing like that to curb your digital enthusiasm. And when I came back, it was the longest I'd been offline in 15 years. And I felt like I'd missed a lot of news events. But at the same time, Facebook allows you to kind of catch up in ways that you might not have otherwise. And I also felt the need to kind of share what happened. And I had to kind of control myself and say, look, here's the things that are useful and helpful to some of my friends to know. The rest don't need to know.
But it has led to all sorts of addictions. I was at the theater last night, and a woman sitting next to me knew that she'd gotten a message right before the play started. And she just was so curious. In the middle of the first act, she turned on her BlackBerry, I think it was. The light was really annoying, to find out what had happened. And then she kept it on through the second act. She put her hand over it, but she was afraid she might miss something.
And there's a big issue where you're missing the things that you're enjoying. It happened to me in one way. I used my iPhone to shoot a video of my son and I parasailing. Instead of enjoying the parasailing and they're up in the sky, total silence, and enjoying the view, I was fiddling with the iPhone and making sure the video was working correctly. And that's the mistake that people make. She missed this great the moment in the theater to focus on something far away.
Amy from Manhattan writes in, is having a button made that says, I will join Facebook when I'm convinced you can keep your cold virtual fingers off my private setting. I'm not sure that actually means, but she's basically saying she's not ready to join Facebook until she's assured that she'll have real privacy.
You never know.
Oh, she's going to make that button she's for herself, make them, I'm told.
But what happens is that we see people who are holding off because of the worry about privacy. But it's something that you'll never have control over. As soon as you type it in with the keyboard and it goes onto someone's server, goes over a network, you have lost control of it. So control what you say, then you won't worry about the privacy. If you don't overshare, then you don't have to worry.
All these online tools are being championed as creating a community and opening up dialogue, especially comments sections of publications, although it has also been pointed out that many of the comments sections invite the snarkiest kinds of responses rather than really reasoned responses. Has the opportunity to comment positively or negatively created a better exchange of ideas?
I think it has overall. But if you go to any newspaper website or internet forum at any moment, it looks like total chaos. And one of the things that Facebook has been trying to do is to say, use the Facebook tools to allow comments on third-party sites. And the reason is they say if you are real on Facebook, you're less likely to be racist, xenophobic, et cetera, because your mother's your friend on Facebook, your rabbi's your friend on Facebook, et cetera.
On the other side, there's a debate over whether you should police the comment sections and or respond to the more awful things. Just delete them. What do you think?
I think it depends on what you're doing, what your mission is. I know people who engage with everyone online and respond to all the crazy stuff that goes out there. There's no time or need for that. I think if you get a smart comment or criticism that's constructive, it's worth responding to, perhaps, if you have the time. But life's too short.
Right now what we're seeing is major news organizations hiring people to do just that.
Yeah, they're social media editors. I'm helping to fill two social media editor jobs right now. That's how popular this role is within companies. Again, we go back to...
Were you teaching this at Columbia School of Journalism?
Yes, I said to
my... Is there going to be a new J-School course?
There is already a course. I said to my students, if your parents knew you're at Columbia J-School taking a class in Facebook and Twitter, they'd call my boss, Nicholas Lemon, who many of your listeners know from The New Yorker, and get me fired. So instead, we have to look at social media as in a more intellectual, smart, strategic way to enhance journalism, not to share what you ate for breakfast. And by the way, I mentioned Ruth Reichel. She's terrific on Twitter. @RuthReichel is her Twitter handle.
We have posted a link to your guide to social media on Tumblr on our show page at WNYC.org in case listeners want to check it out. We go now to Frank. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay.
This is about the parasailing comment. I'm wondering about a potential backlash against social media and technology where possibly it's more valuable to experience things in the moment and not through social media or through video and camera recording.
I know exactly what you mean, and I think that I was lucky that some of my camera, my iPhone ran out of juice at some point, so I was able to concentrate on what I was doing. But at the same time, I have to say, coming back and then sharing that with my son and my daughter and kind of rewatching some of that was also nice. So we don't want to completely discount that aspect of it. I also use a new tool that I'm testing out called Tout, TOUT.com, which does 15-second videos. And I know anyone who does real television is going to say 15-second videos. It's like Twitter. Yes, it's like Twitter, but video Twitter, only 15 seconds long. And it's capturing little moments of your life is what they call it.
Last month, Maureen Dowd of The New York Times wrote, quote, as fiendish little gadgets conspire to track our movements and record our activities wherever we go, producing a barrage of pictures of everything we're doing and saying, our lives will unroll as one long instant replay.
To some people, that sounds wonderful. To others, it's a horrible, terrible idea. And that's and how you react to that depends on what you're doing. The other thing I did, Leonard, this cruise when I was disconnected was read the book about Steve Jobs, the biography. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating to see how he created a lot of those gadgets and changed our lives. At the same time, he maintained his view of privacy and how he shared things. And he was even against consumerism and against material possession of things. And then he created the things that a lot of us now covet, like the iPad and the iPod, iPhone and the iPod.
Let's go to another call. This is Mel in Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Great show. I just wanted to know whether Sri had some comments concerning this huge dump that WikiLeaks did last month, in which they essentially highlighted the enormous industry that has emerged to monitor all kinds of electronic communications, including social media.
I think that it highlighted a problem that we all need to be aware of, that everything you're doing is being watched and can be monitored. Leonard had earlier said, is there a chance that there's so much information that it will be hard for governments to sift through it? That's the hope, but I don't think that's the case in reality because...
Well, the NSA is right now collecting everything that is in the cloud, isn't it?
I presume it is doing...
And then they're looking for
doing,
certain words.
And if you were the NSA, wouldn't you do it? I can totally see them doing that. And by the way, we're sending all our tweets to the Library of Congress. So this is all stuff that's going to live on forever.
Well, my suggestion is if you're a terrorist, do not write the word terrorist in any of...
Or bombing New York City.
Right, none of those words. Let's deal with some of the comments that listeners have been sending in to my guest, Sri Srinivasan, who is a professor of digital media and dean of student affairs at Columbia School of Journalism. Jane left this comment. She says, my 17-year-old insists that Twitter is only for old people.
This is the most surprising thing to old people because they think all the kids know the technology, they love the technology, but she's right. People in their in their teens and early 20s think that Twitter is full of old people. And that's because they love Facebook and they haven't seen a reason to use Twitter yet. Though, of course, there are millions of young people on Twitter as well.
Mitchell posted this on our show page. He said, it's not about what you post. It's all the data that's collected by liking something, articles you click on, your data trail, not to mention all that information sold to third-party sites.
And what that means is people have especially marketers, this is a marketer's dream, that they now know more about you, can slice and dice the information about you, and therefore sell your information to advertisers. And that's what we're doing. We are giving Facebook and all these other sites content against which they can sell ads, and we are the content.
Michael from, where are you from? Oh, it doesn't really matter, Michael. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Once again, my name is Michael. I'm from Queens.
Okay.
And my question is regarding about privacy on LinkedIn and Twitter versus privacy on Facebook. I joined LinkedIn and Twitter, and I have an account there, but I don't have an account on the Facebook because of the privacy issues.
So
what is I want to hear the speaker's opinion about this issue.
So let's think about this very quickly in this manner. Twitter is where you are sharing information that is public and is meant to be public. That's the best use of Twitter. LinkedIn is the things you want to share and to read that have to do with your work, your career, and your long-term goals in those areas. And so you control the privacy of who you connect with and who you say hello to and who you share with. Facebook, I think of as connecting with friends and family. In my case, I have people in 8-10 countries around the world, and we're connected better now because of Facebook and because Facebook has introduced the ways in which you can share information just with a few people. Thanksgiving this year, I shared one Thanksgiving photo with all my friends and then shared 40 pictures with just my family, and that I was able to do for the first time.
Okay, thank you so much for calling us, Michael. Lex asks, why are we so obsessed with privacy? Unless your information puts your life in jeopardy, what's the big deal? Do most of us do anything that's really so important or so illegal or so immoral that we should be wary of publicity?
So here's an example of this. I am taking Lipitor for the cholesterol drug, and I took a picture of my new prescription. And before I took it, I wondered, will someday some employer look at me and say, you know, this guy is, you know, a risk, or an insurance, more importantly, an insurance company look at me and say, he's such a risk. They would know that anyway, but he's been on Lipitor since the age of 40. That's a long time to be on Lipitor, something like that. So those are the privacy concerns that can give you an accurate but also sometimes a misleading profile of you.
On the other hand, you're at Columbia J School. Where would you want to go?
Thank you. You're right.
Maria, New Jersey, says, can Sri please talk more about Google Plus and its merits or value versus Facebook?
Google Plus does a couple of things that are really unusual. One is this thing called Hangouts, where you can go and have video conversation with up to 10 other people, all online, all free. Again, for some people, that sounds like a nightmare. But for others, it's a great way to connect. And we're seeing politicians do this. We also saw the Dalai Lama and Desmond and Archbishop Desmond Tutu do this Hangout together. So that's a big, big thing. And Google Plus has a big plus, and that is the word Google. And that means Google will use its back end within the search rankings to affect what happens in terms of content being displayed and showing up in search results.
But we're seeing that the wars between the different producers of this technology has led to weird things like Siri doesn't go to Google when you ask her a question. How much can we trust some of these things?
Remember, these are mostly publicly traded companies whose bottom line, whose main interest is their bottom line, and their interest is to their shareholders and not to their users. And therefore, they will do things that will make the most sense to them to make money. And we should not forget that this is not a charity that they're running.
Geolocation services are becoming increasingly popular components of social media. Online dating sites like OkCupid have apps that allow you to see other users who are in close proximity to you. Some people embrace this kind of thing. Others I've spoken to see it as kind of creepy. What do you see?
It can be creepy, but there's also a valid use of it is anytime we go to a restaurant now, we check in via Foursquare, and we see what restaurant tips people have left in terms of what food to eat, what dishes to order, and it has improved our selection process, even at restaurants we already knew.
Well, it was recently revealed that many smartphones keep track of everywhere we go. Is that something that we should be concerned about?
Yes, and it's just another way in which things around us are keeping track of us, and we have to be aware of that.
So the message I've been getting again and again is that these things are double-edged swords.
Double-edged swords. Be an early tester, a late adopter. Early tester, late adopter.
Because you're warned about the negatives if you don't jump in immediately.
And you don't need to. There's no prize, as I said, to being first.
I'm sure all of your students are very sophisticated about these things. Are they teaching you?
I learn from them every day about how to use these tools because we're all learning. Nobody has the rules. So if anybody ever says that they're a social media expert or there are rules on social media, I think that that's wrong. What we have are kind of guidelines, conventions, standards that we're all learning together. This is like radio in 1912. So we're just getting started.
Well, I've been wondering about how to make my $1 billion. is there a little vacuum there that needs to be filled?
Oh, well, that's what you have to find something. But at Leonard Lopate, right? That's the address to give out so that people will follow you.
Srinivasan is a professor of digital media and dean of student affairs at Columbia School of Journalism. And we have a link to his site.
And I'm at Sri on Twitter.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us again on this show.
Thank you.